You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. The U.S. Supreme Court this morning released its highly anticipated decision that overturns the constitutional right to an abortion. Upending half a century of precedent from Roe v. Wade, the majority opinion of the court was that states should make their own decisions. Shockwaves were immediately felt here in Wisconsin, where an 1849 law is, at least in theory, now in effect, though legal challenges are likely. Planned Parenthood of Wisconsin CEO Tanya Atkinson said, clinics turned away patients today in waiting rooms after the ruling acknowledging abortion now being illegal in the state. President Biden spoke late this morning, calling it a sad day for the country in court. Here's some of what he concluded his speech with.
With this decision, the conservative majority of the Supreme Court shows how extreme it is, how far removed they are from the majority of this country. They made the United States an outlier among developed nations in the world. But this decision must not be the final word.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your reactions to this decision? What's been on your mind today? How are you feeling about it? What do you want to see happen with Wisconsin laws? Observing the 1849 law now on the books and enforceable apparently again? Or do you want action taken in the state legislature to alter that in some way? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Susan Liebel is professor of political science and Warren Research Chair at St. Joseph's University in Philadelphia. She teaches courses in political theory and public law, among others. Susan, welcome back to Central Time.
Great to be with you, Rob.
What does this mean now? What is the state of the law of the land in the United States and states around the country?
Well, it really depends where you live. And so now what we're looking at is a country that's divided into three types of states. We have states with laws that protect reproductive rights, either in their constitution or by their legislature. So the Northeast, Maine through Maryland, Illinois and Minnesota, Colorado and New Mexico, Washington, Oregon, Nevada and California. Then we have states with that have what's called trigger laws, laws that will make abortion illegal as soon as the court officially rules, or in the case of Wisconsin, an older law that is still standing. And that will create an abortion desert. We'll see like Texas, Arkansas, Mississippi, Louisiana. It will be difficult to sort of drive out of that area to find access to abortion. And there's more states than that, but I don't want to list them all out for you. And then lastly, there are undecided states, states where we're going to see political actors negotiate. We should be watching Virginia and Florida. Virginia's governor made an announcement this morning asking for a new law. Wisconsin is a state that people are going to be watching as well. And this includes a lot of states, not Michigan, Pennsylvania, Virginia, North Carolina, Florida. So big states, and so we're going to see a very different country with very different rights depending where you live.
Let's talk about what went into this ruling. We had this law in Mississippi. It seemed that Chief Justice Roberts was pulling for a narrower ruling just on that law, and upholding that, there was a 6-3 majority. Then on the decisions of whether to overturn Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey, as I understand it, Justice Roberts did not go along with that, so it was a 5-4 decision. What led the court to take this wider approach, overturning those two precedents, as opposed to the narrower approach that Justice Roberts appeared to want?
Well, there's sort of two answers. One is a constitutional law answer, and one's political. And I'll give you the constitutional law answer first, which is that, you know, the court looked at Mississippi's law and said it's constitutional because Roe and Casey were wrongly decided, what they called egregiously wrong. They said women have no right to access abortion that is covered by the U.S. Constitution. They looked at the 14th Amendment's due process clause that protects against being deprived of liberty. And they said liberty doesn't include access to abortion. They looked at the meaning of the word liberty in the context of what Americans believed and what American law covered in 1868 when the 14th Amendment was passed. So Justice Alito dismissed Justice O'Connor's arguments in Casey about bodily integrity and control over reproduction as what she called central to personal dignity and autonomy for women. Instead, Alito said abortion destroys what Roe called potential life, but what the court is now calling unborn human beings. And normally, and you said this, the court doesn't overturn its own rulings, especially ones that are 50 years old. But Alito said that overturning was required because the court had been wrong. And going forward, the court will look only at whether the state's legislation was rational, and it won't subject it to careful scrutiny based on gender or liberty rights. And Justice Roberts's opinion was important. So was Justice Kavanaugh's. So Justice Kavanaugh didn't sign the majority opinion. He used softer language. And he explicitly said that preventing women from traveling to another state to obtain an abortion would be unconstitutional. Justice Roberts was angry, really angry. He agreed that Mississippi's law was constitutional, but for really different reasons. He said, you know, the core holding in Roe and Casey is that women have a right to choose. And he thought 15 weeks gave women time to realize that they were pregnant and make a choice. And he harshly chastised the court majority for overturning precedent, for judicial activism, and for jolting the legal system. And he thought the court should have been more restrained. Just answered the question, is Mississippi law unconstitutional? So this was wider ranging than it needed to be.
Talking to Susan Liebel from St. Joseph's University in Philadelphia, looking at this morning's U.S. Supreme Court ruling overturning Roe v. Wade. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your reactions, your questions. Let's go to your calls now. Bill is with us in Superior. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I'm in support of the Supreme Court's decision, and I've got 3 points to make about the whole decision. My first point is the Supreme Court didn't ban anything. They can't ban laws. There was never a federal law banning abortion. My second point is it has nothing to do with reproductive rights or reproductive health, because if you're pregnant, obviously the reproduction system's kind of working. And my third point is it has nothing to do with taking equality away from women, because I'm pretty sure it's been illegal for men to kill babies forever, too.
Bill, thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. His first point, Susan, accurate. The Supreme Court isn't banning abortion. It's allowing states to do so if they so wish.
Yes, that's true. I guess what I would say to Bill is points two and three, you know, need a little bit of fleshing out. When you say that women's bodies are working, that makes it seem as if all pregnancies are chosen. And we know that incest and rape are problems in the United States, and that children are the victims of both incest and rape. So when we make statements as radical as what Bill just said, I think we're one, out of step with public opinion in the United States, and two, we're out of step, even if you want to go back to the law, of punishing people for rape, for incest, and for looking at pregnancy in a much more nuanced manner. In terms of equality, I think this is very, very important. Women's bodies and men's bodies are different. And because women carry fetuses, they are subject to choices about employment, health, and finances. And there are superb studies. I would tell people to Google the Turnaway study that show what happens when women don't have access to decide whether or not to expand their families. Most women who seek abortions in America have children, and they are looking to make decisions that are personal about how it is that they will move forward in their lives.
Thanks for that call. We'll go next to Rita in La Crosse. Rita, hi.
Hi. I'm livid. I cannot understand how they think they have the right to tell a woman what to do with her body. These are decisions that are made in a family between a husband and a wife, and they have no right to do that. They make us second-class citizens again, and when will it end with the rights that they're taking away? I'm just so angry about this. I have grandchildren that should be able to decide what they want to do with their own bodies.
Rita, thanks for the call. Susan?
Rita, your anger was reflected in the dissent written by Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan. They were strident. They accused the court of judicial activism. And they said the word liberty means bodily integrity. It means access to birth control. It means making decisions about how you travel or how you have sex or whom you marry. And for them, like you, the ruling meant women would not be free and equal citizens in the United States. And they used very harsh words about destroying women's autonomy, especially women who don't have enough wealth to travel to another state to obtain an abortion. And I want to underline that, you know, in the case we saw yesterday on guns, the court was saying that we're now going to look at history. And in this case, the dissent was very upset that looking at history in 1868 meant that women wouldn't have rights, because women didn't have the same rights in 1868 as they do now. And they weren't part of the public that passed the 14th Amendment. So I would say read the dissent. I think that you'll see a lot of the arguments that you're making made by the three justices.
Thanks for that call. We're talking to Susan Liebel about today's U.S. Supreme Court ruling overturning Roe v. Wade. She's a professor of political science at St. Joseph University. You could join in with your reaction, your question about what happens next, what you want to see happen next, and let us know if this is a voting issue for you one way or another. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our talk about the Supreme Court ending the what had been viewed as a constitutional right to an abortion in previous decisions. Susan Liebel is with us, chair and professor of political science at St. Joseph's University. Back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Andrew is with us in Palmyra. Andrew, hi.
Hi, I've got just two quick points. The first point would be regarding the rape and incest argument. People point to this and they say, well, this is why abortion has to be allowed. And my question would be is, if conservatives were to say, okay, rape and incest will allow abortion, however, any other case where it's something that's elective and it's not rape or incest, those are legislated against, would they be okay with that? Secondly, when the argument of it's a woman's body comes up, I'd like to ask, how many fingers, how many toes, how many legs, how many hands does a woman have? Because that's not her body that they're talking about eliminating. That's not her unique set of genetic code that they're talking about ending. So it's not her body that they're going to be eliminating. And I think those are two points that need to be discussed.
Andrew, thanks for the call. Susan, your thoughts.
Well, the implications of what Andrew is raising would mean that we would return to a very different world in which women do not have the same rights to make decisions about their jobs or their social and political worlds that men do. And the implication of what Andrew is saying is that we could also regulate women's pregnancies if we come to see the fetus as a life that is equal to a woman's, which is, I think, if I understand Andrew correctly, his argument, then we could regulate whether they smoked cigarettes or whether they went to the gym. In other words, the fetus, and Justice Thomas would like to see us go in this direction, would have equal standing with her. I'd also like to point out that not all religions believe what Andrew has just said. So the idea that life begins at conception is a strongly held religious belief by some Americans of some religions. There are other Americans with equally strong held beliefs who are part of religions that require abortion. Judaism is one of those religions that requires a preference for the life of the mother, and for 5,000 years they have held that as their position. So the position that Andrew is suggesting, and that the court may be suggesting, would open up problems for the First Amendment. How would we guarantee the right of different people to exercise their religions?
We heard a comment on our online comment section on our website asking, if a pregnant person has a miscarriage, can they get medical help to pass the tissue, or is that also illegal now? They go on, I just got married this month. I'm debating if it's even worth trying to have kids, if the chance of a miscarriage could equal a chance of death with a miscarriage. You were talking about the idea of surveillance and sort of tracking what happens over the course of a pregnancy. I don't think those questions are answered yet, but do you have concerns about the policing of miscarriages?
There's a wonderful book by Renee Kramer that I recommend to the person who wrote in. She writes in a remarkably sophisticated way about how miscarriages may be criminalized and have been criminalized in the past. So the person writing in has an excellent point. Can states legislate criminalize miscarriages? Can they require women to register their pregnancies? This has been suggested as policy, so that as soon as they were pregnant, they would register with the state, and then they would have to justify why they were no longer pregnant. This raises issues that are so far beyond what I think have even been discussed publicly. And, you know, and I also want to underline that overturning Roe and Casey affects all people in the United States, because this decision reaches far beyond abortion to our rights to make choices about how to have sex, whether to access birth control, and whom we can marry. So we really have to think very, very carefully about the implications of saying that people are not free. And I just want to go back to something that was said earlier about the wording of the Constitution. Take a look at the Ninth Amendment. It says that the enumeration, the listing of rights in the Constitution, shouldn't be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. I'm not clear that the framers thought that state legislatures should be dictating whether we can buy birth control or not. I think they were making a list of some rights, but not assuming that those were the only rights that the people had.
Talking to Susan Liebel from St. Joseph's University about the U.S. Supreme Court decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. Back to your calls. Pat is with us in Green Bay. Pat, hi.
Greetings. Bear with me. I'm going to try and pick my words carefully. I don't want to offend anybody, but I am sick and tired of the rich politicians telling the people who put them in office that this is what you are going to do. This, they've pushed us back, just in the case of Wisconsin, into the, 19th century? Correct me if I'm wrong. It's ludicrous that somebody that sits in a political office thinks that they have the right to tell a person how they can treat their body.
Pat, thanks for the call, Susan. That gets back to what you're saying about bodily autonomy and whether, and this is kind of core to the argument here, whether the Constitution guarantees that.
I also think Pat has a really, I know Pat's feeling a lot of emotion, and a lot of Americans are feeling emotion on both sides today, and I really want to respect that. But, you know, I think underlying some of Pat's emotion is frustration. You know, most of the American people believe that there should be access to abortion. This decision is so far out of keeping with those ideas that it really puzzles people. And I think that we should understand this decision not as some sort of, oh, this is just the court behaving as it always has. That's not the case. What we're seeing is two things. One, it's the result of minority rule. The six members of the court who oppose abortion are and were put on the court to oppose abortion. There's excellent scholarship in a new book out by Mary Ziegler that explains how it is that donations to the Republican Party led to the appointment of these justices. The Republican Party did not see abortion as part of its policy priorities until it was forced to do so by donations. So what we're seeing is a form of extremism that's out of touch with what Americans feel. But the problem, and I think Pat says this well, is that how would you vote to overturn this? So Justice Alito said women can go out and vote, but actually, and I think people in the state of Wisconsin know this well, gerrymandering, voter suppression, certain rules that place the vote out of reach for some people mean that registering your vote is actually quite difficult. And there's been superb work by Rebecca Kreitzer on how women are systematically excluded from wielding political power. And she documents the different ways in which disproportionate family caretaking responsibilities end up with fewer women running for office. Women are not without electoral or political power, Alito says, but really careful research shows that in fact, in many states, women do not have the power because of party control, gerrymandering, voter suppression, et cetera. So I think that turning to the polls is very important here. And I think that in states like Wisconsin, this will be very interesting to watch because of the kind of divided government that you have.
A tweet here from Reince Priebus of Wisconsin, former Republican National Committee chair, quoting, "True, this decision sends this issue back to states, but due process and constitutional rights begin at conception. That decision is coming next for the Supreme Court." Just our last less than a minute. Do you think we'll see more efforts to restrict abortion coming from the court next?
If the Republican National Committee gets what was just suggested, with life beginning at conception as the equivalent of living and breathing and walking and thinking women, then we are talking about having a society in which women are, in fact, second-class citizens and in which we revert to a form of patriarchy that Justice O'Connor in Casey spoke to. And I think it's good to remember Justice O'Connor was one of the most conservative justices and a Republican that we saw on the court. But yet, as a woman, as somebody who graduated second in class from Stanford and unable to get a job as a lawyer, she was very conscious of the differences between treatment of men and women in the United States.
Susan, thanks. We'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us today. That's Susan Liebel from St. Joseph's University looking at today's U.S. Supreme Court ruling on Roe v. Wade. We'll talk about this more on Monday.